FM Rewind, File 88.1.
Now, earlier on, we spoke about the struggles many young people face and how some young people find themselves, you know, turning to drugs and harmful substances as a way to cope. We also heard deeply from our guest, Buhle Nojoko, who shared a personal story and a powerful story from about how he managed to overcome addiction and how now he's a living proof that recovery is possible. Now, South Africans are known for their resilience, and we are a people of Ubuntu, if I can put it in simple terms. Therefore, behind every recovery, especially the recovery stories that we hear on various platforms, there is often a strong support system. People who dedicate their lives to walking with others through the difficult path of healing. So tonight, we are privileged enough to be joined by an expert in the field of counseling, who is someone who represents exactly what we call a light in the darkness. He'll join us. He'll tell us more about how he overcame his journey and also how he helps others overcome this addiction that we're talking about in this evening. Now, we are joined by Marco Mendoza, the CEO of SANA Recovery Center and a certified addiction counselor. He is joining us live and direct in studio. Good evening. Marco, thank you so much for gracing us with your presence. Eh?
Good evening. The privilege is all mine.
Now, earlier on, we were joined by Buhle Nojoko, who shared his story. And you also told us that you were once, you know, lost in this drug and substance abuse. Can you please tell us about how you managed to overcome that? Because it's not easy, eh?
Yeah, I think it's really not an easy journey to embark on. Is also not an easy road to travel back from, depending on how far we've gone down the scale and exactly where the addiction has taken us. But I think motivation is quite a big factor in why we want to stop. What brings us to our knees, what brings us to the point where the very thing we used to once cope with life stops working. And I think that is the starting point where change begins to happen. You know, where I start to think maybe there's another way to live. Maybe I need to find something else that can take me out of the hole that I've dug for myself.
And you are now the CEO of SANA Recovery Center. And not only that, a certified addiction counselor. Let's talk about what inspired you to be part of this work.
Okay. For me, quite simple, you know, I lived a life of addiction, so I had first-hand experience. I know what it was like to be down there. I know how hard it was to come out of there. So when I'd finally embarked on my journey of recovery and got a substantial amount of, you know, time behind me, you know, I thought to myself that there's only thing, you know, I believe that life prepared me for one thing and one thing only. And the testimony of my survival from addiction was the very thing that told me that I needed to go out there and help others, because that's what life trained me for.
Now, in your experience, what are some of the most common reasons people, especially young people, fall into substance abuse in this day and age?
I think we can always link it back to something we call ACE. Adverse childhood experiences or childhood emotional neglect, but it can always be linked to past trauma or, you know, things that we have gone through growing up. You know, as kids we process things far differently than we do as adults. You know, as a kid I wasn't able to rationalize things that were going on in my life. I wasn't able to think logically, so I formed these belief systems about the world. I formed these belief systems about my family. I form a set of values. And it can always be tracked down to that. Also, I mean, in today's day and age, we've got social media, which promotes the use of narcotics and alcohol. We have stresses from educational environments. We have socioeconomic stresses. So all of these things play a factor, I believe.
Now, let's get into the exceptional work that SANA does. Let's talk about the approach, how it differs from other recovery centers that you've encountered. How is your mechanism when it comes to approaching?
So the ethos of SANA Recovery Center is built on unconditional positive regard. You know, it's about seeing somebody. And it's less about counselor-patient, and it's more about us being a family. And, you know, we kind of in this together. I might be bleeding the family, but at the end of the day, we're still a family. And my job is to impart what I've learned on my process to those who come after me, just like the ones who imparted it that came before me. So it's about making people feel welcome. It's about making people feel like they have purpose, treating them with compassion and dignity, because people come in broken. So we need to uplift them, and we need to, you know, tell them that they're good enough, tell them that they can do it, so we can motivate them for change.
If you just tuned in, welcome to Wellness Booth right here on Vow 88.1. We are in conversation with the CEO of SANA Recovery Center, Marco Mendoza. He's also a certified addiction counselor. We also want to interact with you and let us know on how we as the youth can help each other to fight the scourge of drug and alcohol abuse within our society on 0745779461. Now, SANA offers what you call inpatient and outpatient treatment. How do you decide which path is right for each client, or perhaps someone who is looking into recovering from drug and alcohol abuse?
Okay, so the first thing that needs to be done is, and this generally happens telephonically, we do a comprehensive screening. Where we'll screen who exactly is looking for care or who exactly is looking for help. Depending on circumstances, do we establish whether our level of care is correct for the individual, or a more intensive or less intensive level of care is appropriate? If that answers the question.
Yeah. I think it does make sense, especially when it comes to how different people in this addiction require different ways to recover, and it's very important for them to be at least screened and get to know how they got into the substance abuse. Now, I want us to talk about what you do as the SANA Recovery Center, especially the process from the moment a person walks through the doors. What can they expect in the first few days? How is the recovery process, to be specific?
So the first thing that has to happen is a doctor's consultation. They'll go through medical evaluation to find out if they fit for care, because a lot of time people do need hospitalization as opposed to just jumping into a recovery process. From there, we do something called a biopsychosocial assessment, where we assess the biology, psychology, and social dynamics of a person's life to try and go back as far as we can to their first or earliest childhood memory, so that we can structure a treatment plan. We do something called an IRT report, which is, you know, an assessment, integrated summary, and treatment plan. And then that's what happens within the first week. Thereafter, we try to execute that treatment plan and also incorporate relapse prevention.
And speaking of individual treatment, it's very important. But just to paint a picture, how important is it, as opposed to just treating all people the same? How important is making sure that each and every individual is treated differently?
I think individualized treatment is the answer that we're looking for. I think the blanket approach to treatment does, you know, is much less effective than individualized treatment, because we all suffer with different things. We all come from different childhoods, we all come from different backgrounds, we all come from different cultures, different religions. So something that might hit home with me might not hit home with you. Something that you can reach me with, I might not be able to reach you with. So it's very important to understand the person that you're sitting in front of. So in order for that to happen, you need to get to know them. They also need to feel, you know, you have to build some level of rapport where they feel comfortable letting you in. Because if you don't get in, you can't help them.
And how important is people, especially within our society, to avoid judging people who living day in, day out with this drug and alcohol addiction problem, because the first thing that people do, especially when they see someone living in the streets, is to judge. But what's the best way to approach them, especially making sure that I, as the person in the society, wants to or looking forward to at least giving them help and offering them help, instead of first judging them? Is there perhaps a way that you'd like to advise us as the society?
I think we should, I think there should be much more emphasis placed on, community outreach and community support, where we get to educate the community about the effects of drug addiction and the effects that it has on our community. Also, judging people that are living on the streets and in active addiction is just reinforcing the problem. It's not getting a solution. We use drugs because we feel so bad about ourselves, but the use of drugs is the only thing that makes us feel better. So we get trapped in this repetitive cycle that the stigma keeps us trapped in that cycle. And the only way to break the stigma is to, make more information publicly accessible.
Indeed. Now, 074-577-9461. We are in a conversation with Marco Mendoza, the CEO of SANA Recovery Center and a certified addiction counselor. I did ask you a question earlier on how can we as the youth of South Africa help fight the scourge of drug and alcohol abuse within our society. And this is what you said.
Hi, Val. I think as youth, we can play a very important, significant role in combining what you call drug and alcohol abuse in our community. Raising awareness, organize workshop, seminar, or social media campaign to educate peer about the what you call the consequences of our substance abuse. For example, peer support, crisis support groups, promote health alternatively, encourage participation in sports and all stuff, community engagement, mentorships, advocacy. It's what you can actually, as youth, you can do so that you can actually reduce the alcohol abuse and also the drugs abuse. I really thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the voice note on 074-577-9461. I love the fact that you included the importance of raising awareness, especially within our communities, making sure that we educate young people about the dangers of getting into any form of drug abuse, or to be precise, drug and alcohol abuse. Now, let's talk about how, especially when it comes to working with people struggling with burnout, gambling, and other compulsive behaviors. How do these conditions overlap with substance abuse?
So there are many, we call these process addictions in terms of, gambling, eating, sex, these are all things called process addictions. They are very closely linked and they often overlap with substance abuse. And in terms of, in terms of burnout and that stuff, we talk about quality of life. And quality of life can be reduced by drug addiction, but it can also be reduced by gambling. Loss of income, spending money on, spending household money on the casino, etc. So they're very closely linked. And, it all comes back to the brain and the expression of dopamine. It's that risk-reward factor, that chasing something that we never get to. So they're very closely linked together.
Now, I want us to talk about the importance of support that comes from family, friends, and acquaintances. How important is it?
It's very important. But there's a concept called tough love. And, there's a very fine line between support and enabling. I think the best way to approach this is we give people a hand up, we don't give people a hand out. Because giving people a handout will enable the problem to carry on, as the individual will never have to take responsibility for anything. But a hand up is different. I'll help you up. However, your life is your responsibility, and you need to take the initiative to do something with it.
And I want us to also talk about, you know, the importance of young people to be surrounded by people who will inspire them. Because, you know, when you're still young, sometimes you don't know which of the right people are to surround yourself with. You know, even when your parents, your guardians warn you and advise you not to follow certain group of people, you sometimes don't follow those orders. But how is it important, and how would you advise young people to be able to at least keep themselves busy and surround themselves with people who are inspirational?
I think this one goes back to goal tracking. You know, it's like, you know, I want to set a goal and I want to be a certain something in life. You know, I want to be a lawyer or a doctor or an accountant. You know, if I want to be a lawyer, I'm not going to hang around with electricians. If I want to be a lawyer, I'm going to hang around with lawyers. So it's important to know what we want out of life, where we want to go, and then who to surround ourselves with. Because the fact of the matter is, we become who we surround ourselves with. If you show me your friends, I'll show you who you are. So it's important to know and to find out kind of what you want to do, and then surround yourself with people that are going to support that narrative.
And let's talk about some of the awareness and mentorship programs that you offer to young people, and even people who recover from any drug and substance abuse, because, you know, there's life after that, and sometimes it's difficult for one to know where to go. The first steps to take are the hardest. But how do you at least intervene and help those who have recovered to know where to go and plan their life ahead?
So there are many community-based support systems and support networks out there that are freely available to the public. You don't have to pay to go. They are completely free, self-run. There are many of these organizations that are out there that are helping anybody, all people from all walks of life, with a place and a message of recovery. Also, you know, it's nice to go into schools and also educate the young people about the effects of drugs and where drugs take us and what drugs do to our lives and our families, and, you know, speak them through the process so they can see and hear in firsthand what it does to the lives of people.
We spoke about the importance of friends and family support. And as someone listening either in Alex, Soweto, Bramfontein, having a loved one, be it a friend or a sibling, struggling and suffering from a drug and alcohol abuse, where do I start?
So the first would be to check on Google, or, you know, Google what community resources are available in your area. You know, phone a couple of treatment centers that you can find on the internet. You know, and if you are not the right fit, or if that loved one is not the right fit for the center they're inquiring to, then it's this center's ethical responsibility to point them in the right direction. So get on the internet, look for suitable places, look for community programs, look for social support networks.
And what are the signs? Because sometimes we get into conclusion, we end up judging instead of sitting down and having a conversation with either a friend or a sibling that I suspect is suffering from drug and alcohol abuse. But what are those signs?
The signs that they are suffering.
Yeah, the signs to look out for.
So it depends on, you know, this is a wild question. It varies depending on what substance they're using. So, you know, also the truth about drugs, there's these pamphlets that are also available that you can read on. I mean, Google is also freely available, where you can look at what is the, you know, that you can just Google the symptoms and see what it says. But, I mean, you get uppers and downers. You get things that will keep you awake for days. You get things that will put you to sleep. So it's quite hard to gauge. But if you are... I think a drug test is one of the most accurate ways to tell if somebody is suffering.
Now, just to wrap up this conversation, why do some people go back? What makes it for someone to recover and then after some couple of months go back?
So unfortunately, relapse has become the norm in our society, and it's not supposed to be the norm. It's just, it's supposed to be the exception, too. But it's not. So, you know, people reserve the right to control certain aspects or areas of their life. Now, for me to change and to survive substance abuse, I need to change everything about my life. I need to start fresh. That means I need to get rid of my old contacts. I need to get rid of my old friends. We call it people, places, and playgrounds.
Yeah.
I cannot go to those places anymore, see those people, or hang around or do those things anymore. And people have a lot of hard time letting go of that because we are humans at the end of the day.
Yeah.
We were made for connection. We were made to connect with people. And if I can't connect with them, who can I connect with? So many times relapse comes from not wanting to let go of an old place, an old person, or old things. And as soon as we reintegrate back into the society from which we came, all the triggers are there because it's so freely available and accessible and everybody's doing it.
So it boils down to the triggers and, you know, suffering from getting used to a new way of doing things in new life. Now, I want us to talk about the changes that you'd like to see in South Africa's broader approach to addiction treatment and mental health care, because we currently have a scourge of young people getting into toxic substance abuse. But there's a change that you'd like to see as the CEO of SANA Recovery Center. There's a change that you'd like to see within our society. What's that change that you'd like to see, and how can we as a society help each other achieve the goal?
Okay. So I think we need to, number one, reduce the stigma around substance abuse. And that will, you know, that has to be done through awareness days, you know, talks like these on the radio, something that's not looked over or to be, you know, too dark to confront, something that we dive into and talk about so people can really understand that this is not a moral failing, it is a disease that people suffer from. Also, we need a lot of community-based treatment centers that are accessible to the public, because in you know, in our country, not everybody can afford to go to treatment. Not everybody has the funds to pay for treatment.
And
we need those centers to come up that are freely accessible to the public. And what I'd ultimately like to see is, you know, addiction to be looked at, or treatment for addiction to be looked at, as a basic right rather than a privilege. Because in our country, it's a privilege.
Yeah, it is.
And it needs to be a basic right.
Marco Mendoza, thank you so much for joining us right here on Voice of Vets 88.1. Speaking of treatment centers, for those who'd like to either contribute to SANA Recovery Center, either for mentorship or perhaps with the funds, and also for someone who's listening right now, they have a friend, a loved one, suffering from drug and alcohol abuse, and they want to bring that person to SANA Recovery Center. How can they do that?
You can go onto our website. It's www.sana-recovery-center.com, and you can connect with me on either one of the platforms, either telephonically over WhatsApp or via email. You can also fill out a form on the website and we will definitely get back to you. And if SANA is not the right fit for you, then we will definitely point you in the right direction.
That is the CEO of SANA Recovery Center and a certified addiction counselor, Marco Mendoza. Once again, thank you so much for joining us right here on Voice of Vets 88.1, and wishing you all the best with your journey. Eh?
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
FM Rewind, File 88.1.